The Rock Fight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and joining me today, he'd rather be hanging with LA Rams first-round draft pick Jared Verse, but he's here to pod. It's Justin Houseman.
I wonder if I would. You know?
Wouldn't you want to be down with your boys in LA, you know, getting ready for the football season?
I don't know. I'd really like watching them play.
To the draft?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd love watching them play, but I don't know if I want to hang out with any. I did. I did my custom. Well, my wife is out of town, so me and the girls went and got pizza, and they had the draft on, and so I saw it, and then I chimed in later on to see who the Rams picked.
I don't watch any college football, and I kind of tune in a little bit just to see who the names are leading up to the draft, because it's just kind of good drama.
Sure.
But I usually don't care. I do have this weird thing, though, where I don't really consider myself to be a Patriots fan anymore, because, like, if they win or lose, I don't care.
Yeah.
However, I was still very interested with them having the third pick, what they were going to do. And then I was, like, stoked that they took Drake May. But I also, like, it's not like I'm not like, yes, we got our guy, whatever.
Totally.
And I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
And that, you know, it's just almost never works out anyway. I mean, it's rare.
Never.
I mean, the Rams usually don't really have draft picks very high anyways. It's the first time they've had a first-round pick since, like, 2016. And so usually I don't even pay much attention anyway. And, I don't know. It's silly.
All right. Today we're going to run through some of the more notable or exciting headlines that come out of the outdoor industry and community. But before we get to that, we have a few listener reminders. The Rock Fight, everybody, it's growing at an incredible rate right now. And if you're one of those new listeners that we just got, please follow the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you hear us. Just please click follow. It really helps us out. And then when you're done with that, head over to rockfight.co. and sign up for our newsletter, because it's a dope newsletter.
A good newsletter.
We think you'd really like it.
It's a really good newsletter.
Yeah.
Take it from me, a newsletter junkie. It's a good one.
And you know what? I'm going to tease anyone who didn't sign up yet, because you'll hear this after this next issue goes out. There's going to be a new edition of Rose Colored Houseman.
Hey,
we're
going to
put it in the newsletter this week. Yeah, so you get a little Justin Houseman column in the newsletter.
That?
You missed out on it because you didn't subscribe.
Yeah.
But don't worry, it'll probably be on the website next week. So, you know, go
there. Subscribe to the newsletter too.
But subscribe to the newsletter. And lastly, we love hearing from our listeners. We want your suggestions for what Justin can do next weekend. We're going to talk about what he's going to do this weekend in a second. But what do you want him to do next weekend? This is your opportunity. Send what you think he should do to myrockfight@gmail.com. Okay, we're recording this on Friday, April 26th. You're hearing it on Monday, April 29th, which means that in between, we had ourselves a weekend. It also means it's time for America's favorite podcast segment, What is Justin Doing This Weekend? Presented by Long Weekend Coffee. So, Justin, what are you doing this weekend?
Well, it's going to be a weekend full of excitement. Tomorrow is a big bike race, and I'm volunteering at it. I'm going to be one of those people that wears the high-vis and points you in the direction that you're supposed to be going. And I've never done that before, but it sounds like it could be kind of fun. I don't really know. Do I bring a chair? Like, do I sit?
Mm. What are you going to be like at a road crossing?
Yeah.
Here's
the road you go to now. Just directing the bikes. And I got to like cheer them on.
God, I wish you had more build up. You should have like grown a mustache and put on some aviators and put like some short shorts on and been all like, you know, like militant cop out there. That, like,
yeah.
You wait until I tell you to cross.
Well, it's not a crossing. It's so that they know to turn onto this road. So I'm just directing them to here you turn on this road.
Oh.
Yeah, the cars can do whatever the heck
regards,
they want. Yeah.
Is there anyone you don't like in this race that you could redirect
the
wrong way?
Yeah, good point. It's hard to tell though when they got the glasses and the
helmet
on, but that's a really
good
point. Yeah, you just keep on going this way. Keep on going this way. Oh, God, what happens if I miss one? Oh, that would suck.
Right. And the kids come see you and you're all distracted and then it's like, what, did someone go by?
I should probably look more into the details. There was like a Zoom call about it on like Tuesday that I couldn't go to, but there's an email. I'll read the email like 5 minutes before I leave the house in the morning to see what I'm supposed to do.
I mean, I don't know. I've always read those horror stories of races, either running, biking, whatever, where people are like, oh, I got off course or whatever. And I'm sure I definitely had moments during races that I've run where maybe you're looking for the sign, you don't see it. But I never went off course in anything I ever did. Not that I did like thousands of races or anything. But so they usually are pretty good about these things being marked.
It would be pretty hard to miss this one. Like I know the street really well. It could be pretty difficult. But, and if you do miss it, there's not another. I guess there, you know what? I can see actually how it could be.
That's
confusing.
Probably why you're there. Because
there's like one street you turn on and there's like, if you miss it, you could turn on the next one and then that would not help. So maybe that's it. I don't know. But I also like, you know, like, I don't know, like, I guess it, you just, I think it's like 8 to noon. So like at noon, if you haven't gotten there, I guess tough shit. Like, I don't really
know. 12:01. Someone comes riding up. Like, where do I go? Like, I can't help you. I'm off the clock.
Sorry, I'm off the clock. I've only ever done one of these. This is one of these. You know, it's a race, but it's also kind of a fun. You know, it's a race, but it's also just a fun ride. But I've only done one, and I don't even remember the people like directing you. Like, I just was like, you know, was trying to survive.
Actually, here's what you should do for next weekend. I want to know how many people thank you. Because I am the biggest, no matter how bad I'm feeling, any volunteer, I'm out like, thank you so much for being here. Because these things don't happen without you doing what you're doing this weekend, right? Without volunteers, races don't happen. And anytime if I saw any, like, I don't even like it when people don't even, like, say anything to the volunteers. Like, just say thank you to every single person you see. I was actually out mountain biking on some trails near my house a few months ago, and there was a trail running race going on. And I was just thanking the volunteers as I was going by, like, hey, thanks for being here. It's like, it's so cool that you gave up your day to be here so that these people could do this thing. So I'm curious what that experience is going to be like.
But that's Saturday. But the real adventure, I have a big adventure this weekend. And this is one that really need to be doing some training for. But there's a my little girl's turning 5.
Yes.
In a couple weeks, and her best friend turns 5, like, or just did. So they do a big combined birthday party, and that's on Sunday. And there'll be about 7,000 5-year-olds and 4-year-olds at this thing.
Where are you gonna? Is that your house?
My wife. No, it's at a park. Oh. My wife and her friends. My wife and the other little girl's mom planned it all out. They don't really involve me. But that's going to be a big deal. That's going to be a huge undertaking. I don't really know what to expect.
Any dads that you're going to need to avoid? Like, people you're like, oh, that guy's going to be here.
Thankfully, okay. No. You know, it's funny. The moms are all really close at this preschool, but the dads, I'm friends with this little girl's dad. And there's a few other I'm like friendly with, but like the dads don't really hang. Yeah. The moms all get together and hang all the time, but the dads never do.
What Justin is doing this weekend is presented by Long Weekend Coffee, where we are taking suggestions for the future editions of Justin's Weekend. Want to start off your days, adventures, and all of your weekends the right way? Head over to longweekend.coffee, load up on some beans, like the Secret Handshake, which is the favorite blend of the Rock Fight, and then check out at checkout, enter the promo code ROCK10 to get 10% off of your first order. Long Weekend Coffee, more weekend, please. All right, let's get into some headlines. So we're going to start this week with a follow-up from last week, because when we were recording our headlines episode last week, news was just breaking about Kona Bike setting up and tearing down at the Sea Otter Classic. As it turns out, they were not on their way to River Otter Fest at the Hausman's house.
That's true. I was so disappointed. I had a big like welcome party all set up.
They were actually being called home because their parent company, Kent Outdoors, had decided that no amount of BOGOs can make Kona profitable for them.
That's buy one, get one free to you non-salespeople.
Excellent. Thank you for pointing that out. Kent primarily owns water sport brands like Boat, Aquaglide, and O'Brien, and they're going to be looking to sell off Kona, but that is in no way a foregone conclusion.
I've never said that Boat out loud.
Well, that's a hard O.
I was always like...
Boaty?
Boate? Like, it's Boat. It's just Boat.
Well, this makes up for me saying B-stop on yesterday's pod when it said a best
It's
best
just
top.
Boat.
Yeah. It makes sense,
God.
Right?
It makes sense.
It is kind of stupid. They just call it fucking Boat. I don't know why you got to get
just
cute.
Just call it Boat.
Stop being cute. But anyway, it's not a foregone conclusion that they'll find a buyer. So I mean, there's a real chance that Kona's over, right? So definitely some more details than we had when we recorded this last week. But what did you think when you heard about this?
I guess I wasn't that shocked. I mean, we on the Gear and Beer podcast and on Adventure Journal's podcast, I've like just lavished praise on the Kona Unit X, which is one of my favorite bikes, which is their rigid like adventure bike frame that I really like, and it's a great deal. I mean, it's probably even better now. It's like $1,500.
Yeah, it's gonna be a classic soon.
But, yeah, right. But other than that, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know anybody who has a Kona. Like, I don't really see them in stores. They seem like they kind of went down the budget brand. At least, I don't even know if that's true, but it kind of seems like that to me. And, you know, I mean, when I saw the buy one, get one free thing, I'm like, wow, you never see that with anything other than, like, shirts.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, that seemed like a bad thing. But, I will say, I didn't realize how much the bike industry was struggling. I knew it was not doing well. Mm-hmm. But reading some of the reports about this, I was blown away by how bad it's gotten. Like something about some big British like financial firm that invests in a lot of British bike industry stuff is like they don't expect it to like come back for like two more years to like, you know, to get back to where it was.
Escape Collective did a great podcast series about the state of the bike industry. I'd recommend it. It was really good. Wade Wallace hosted it. It's like a 4-part series.
It's a good name.
Is that just because
they just made too many bikes and they were had a glut of inventory what happened?
Yeah, I mean, the short of it is, like, you know, going into COVID, everybody thought that they were going to go out of business because no one's going to be able to do anything. And then they realized that, oh, everybody can go outside, so everybody sold out of everything. And then to kind of get back to where they needed to go with, you know, factory shutdowns and, you know, lack of raw materials, like, it was kind of a nightmare. And then I'm sure, I think that it ended up with people probably over-ordering to kind of make up for what they were missing out on during COVID. And they're still, that's all kind of, like, still being sorted out. You know, for Kona, so I did a little, we talked about this, I think when we talked about the Unit X, like it's an OG brand, man. It's been around since 1988. I didn't realize it was that old.
I see a lot of old ones.
Yeah.
Like I probably see more old ones than new ones.
It's a Pacific Northwest brand. So I don't know if it's kind of one of those, like if you're in the Front Range of Colorado, you see a lot of Yetis, but you don't see a lot of Yetis in other places. I imagine it was something more like that. Cause I'd see them around and I had a buddy when I lived in Washington who rode one, but same as you, like I never really thought much about them. But then if you look, so, you know, Kent, who bought them in 2022, and they cite COVID as a determining factor for getting to this point. I'm like, you bought them just 2 years ago. Like, the challenges in the bike space were happening at that time.
That's a terrible, well, it might have been cheap.
It's probably, you know? Or the founders just punched it, because it was the original founders who sold it to Kent. So their founders were like, all right, we're done. You know, they probably got a deal, got a little bit of money, but I don't know. It just feels like their core competency is water sports, you know, to our point about who they are. Every other brand on their website is a water sports brand. And I just wonder if they just kind of underestimated what it would take to own a bike brand.
I just don't know what that name means to people. You know, like if it was like if Giant went out of business, like is somebody going to go buy,
like,
I know they're big, but like, are there like Giant heads? You know, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know if there's people out there that are like clamoring to bring Kona back. So I don't know like what they offer the other brands didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like it's, which I mean, I guess you could say that about like virtually any bike brand really, other than the boutique ones.
Well, it's probably why that's not a rosy outlook, because they would probably need a more independent, like if you and I were like, hey, we really like Kona, we want to buy a bike brand and own a bike brand, and we bought Kona and kind of operated on a smaller level. That's probably what it needs. But
right.
Who's, you know, I'm sure those buyers aren't like growing on trees, right?
And this isn't to say anything about their bikes. I mean, the only bike I've ever had is a Unit X. I may have mentioned this before, but the bike that got me into mountain biking at all was my buddy got a Kona Hanzo.
Oh, yeah.
Like 10 years ago or something like that. And I hadn't seen a new mountain bike. This is the first bike. This is the first 29er I'd ever seen. It was the first. Actually, it might not even have been a 29er yet, but because even 27 five wheels would have looked huge to me.
Sure.
Because I would have been coming off of a 26. And it was the first dropper post I ever saw. And I was just like, I remember riding it full speed into a curb. Because I'm like, look at this giant fork. Let's see what this thing can do. It's just like dunk over a curb. And I'm like, I'm getting a mountain bike.
Like, this is magic.
I'm getting one. Yeah. And that bike seemed cool, but I didn't know anything about it. But I don't know. It's a bummer. I mean, it's always a bummer. Like it's a bummer because I've heard of the brand. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I always feel for the people that lose their jobs. Of course. And it's also just what a lame way to do it. Like I don't know you can't outdoors, but like surely you knew before Sea Otter that this wasn't going to work.
That was lame.
Like how the hell did that happen?
That team leave for Sea Otter?
That's incredible.
Like,
to me.
Even if you weren't sure, you knew things weren't going great. You know, like
that I could just imagine like two people arguing about this, right? Like in some boardroom somewhere. We're sending them.
Yeah.
No, we're not. Yeah,
that's
we're
exactly
going to send
what happened.
And then like and then someone who's higher up is like, pull it.
Yeah, I kind of hope this is a cautionary tale for those acquiring outdoor brands. I wonder if this is still another case. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they have all these water-based brands and they're like, oh, let's add a bike line. But clearly they were making the brand bigger than it was because they had so many bikes that they were doing buy one, get one. Now you can say that maybe they inherited some problems from COVID, and that's kind of what they're referring to in that press release, that, you know, they were trying to clean up. But I don't know, like you gave it 2 years. You knew you were buying into a category that was struggling coming out of the pandemic. And then you get 2 years later, you're like, ah, this isn't working out. All these brands are not just going to print money for folks, especially a small niche brand like Kona. Like, so it does seem like it was probably not a good call to begin with, you know, but.
RIP, I guess, maybe preemptively, but because even if they get bought, I don't know, that happens sometimes, right? Like Eagle Creek went under and like it got bought by people that I think that used to work with Eagle Creek.
They did. And that one did seem like another one that was like dead in the water, and somebody, it was like a former employee that is bringing it back, right?
So maybe that'll happen. I don't know. I mean, I do feel like I like the name, and like I'd be interested if they came back and like just sold like three different frames and it was kind of a small deal. That'd be cool.
I think it's a cool name. I think, like, obviously they've made good product, you know, as evidenced by your experience. And just like I said, I've known people who are really good mountain bikers who rode Konas. It's a Pacific Northwest brand, though, called Kona. Like, it just sort of, like, doesn't line up to me. Like, you know.
I was shocked they weren't from Hawaii.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I don't know what, I was shocked. I don't know what the Kona references.
Yeah, maybe I got to dig a little more. Maybe one of the owners was, you know, Hawaiian by birth or something like that. But it just, like, I don't know. Weird branding. Oh. It was 1988. Yeah. Everything was on, you know, everything was loose back then, right?
Was it? I don't know. I was 10. I don't know. I probably had a Huffy.
All right. Well, next thing we're going to talk about, athleticsweekly.com. That's a news outlet. I don't know if we've reported from here on the Rock Fight yet, but we are right now. They reported this week that runners in the UK have come together for a united trail run from London to Paris to, quote, campaign for the inclusion of trail running at future Olympic Games. Running it as a relay, four runners left the UK on April 11th. And took turns running it, running the 455K to France, finishing on April 14th. Organizers of the campaign include footwear brand Merrell, and recent trail running stories like Jasmine Paris's performance at the Barclay, and Brit Russ Cook, who recently completed the first ever run of the length of Africa, have been used to highlight the growing popularity of trail running. So you've recently become a competitive marathoner. So what are your thoughts on trail running at the Olympics?
I actually, you know, it's funny. I'm surprised that it hadn't occurred to me before that it was weird that it wasn't part of the Olympics.
Well, so I mean, cross country used to be there, but you know how, are you looking at the outline? Don't look at the outline. How long has it been
I'm not.
Since cross country has been at the Olympics?
Oh God. I would have thought it still was.
Me too.
I don't know. 10 years?
100 years.
Oh my God. It's just never really been a part of it. Like in the modern world.
Because as I was reading this, it was what I was thinking. Like, well, cross country's got to be in there, right?
I never really thought about the fact that cross country is basically trail running.
It's totally trail running.
I mean, you're not often on a trail, right? Like usually you're running over like rolling
like
hills
fields
or
and
something.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But like, I've never thought about that before. They were trail runners. Yeah, I guess they probably do.
Fells running, I guess.
Cross country was always like, one of those things where like, if you look back, like I don't wish I'd played high school football. I wish I'd ran cross country in high school.
Yeah, totally. Cause it's like a 5K, right? It's like 3 miles usually, four miles.
Like crazy.
Something.
And they were, our high school had an amazing cross country team.
Right.
But how was that not in the Olympics?
I don't know. I think it's kind of a cool idea. My initial response was like, I don't know. Is this like just trail running trying to be?
Well,
like,
are they going to build trails?
Well, that's it, right? Or is it some sweet local trail network? Because if you're running, and if it's really trail running, right? If they're like, if you have like Jim Walmsley and like Courtney DeWalter and like are the best trail runners out there who are like ultra marathoners. I say the thing too, what length are we talking about? Is it a 5K? But if you're on single track where it's like passing is hard and stuff like that, that could actually be really interesting.
Can we talk a little bit about the absurdity of how the Olympics, I mean, okay, I was just thinking about how, okay, so then that obviously be a summer Olympic sport.
Of course,
so
right.
If you're going to have it in Beijing, like where are you going to have the trail running? Right. Like I'm sure there's trails not terribly far, but they're going to be far-ish away. And like, I hate that the Olympics does this where it's like some of the events aren't really that close to like the Olympic Village. Are you aware of what's going on with surfing in the Olympics this year?
No, I'm not.
So the 2024 Olympics are in Paris.
Right.
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 Do you know where the surfing is? It's in Tahiti.
What?
It's in Tahiti.
Why?
It's French Polynesia.
Oh, come on.
So it's at Chopu, which is like one of the world's gnarliest waves. And so you have like all these people that are going to like qualify. And like it's during like Chopu's prime swell season. This wave is ferocious. I mean, like they occasionally cancel like world tour events there because it's too gnarly.
Wow.
So you're going to have a bunch you're going to have like the guy who like who got in from the Netherlands. Well, actually, I mean, there's some good surfers there, but like. It's insane.
It's going to be like the
4,000, 5,000, 6,000 miles away from France.
So like, what's the Jamaican bobsled team equivalent of like the surfers this summer?
Well, honestly, dudes like people from the Netherlands, you know, like that.
Right.
So it's just, I mean, what the other part that's insane is France has great waves in the summer.
Really?
Really good waves.
Oh, sure. English Channel.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but right. Like on the Atlantic coast has terrific. I mean, France has terrific.
That's
surf.
What I'm saying. Like, it's all, like, the western part of France is on the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. And like you know, like all the waves.
Why wouldn't you just do that?
Why wouldn't you just do that? I mean, I guess
I think that's way cooler. I would love if you had some like crappy like break. You know what I mean? That doesn't just like, hey man, you got to make hay with what we got out here. Sorry, we're in France. This is what
we
got.
Are the surfers even going to the opening ceremonies? I mean, why? How? Like,
no, they're
going to
be
sense.
In Tahiti.
And like, they're having to build this, they always have contests there. But they're like having to build this like huge elaborate, like thing that like the locals are furious about because they don't want it. I mean, this is like a tiny little town in the middle of the South Pacific. It's not like it's in Papeete, like on the main island of Tahiti.
Don't they do like, isn't it like whitewater an Olympic sport too? And don't they do something like build courses and things like that?
I think they do. Yeah. Well, that everybody thought that once wave pools were a thing, they would just build one for every Olympics, which is insane because it costs like $1 billion.
Well, you're touching on what makes it, I'm concerned about anything with adding trail running is if you're going to find a really cool local trail network, and let's say if the event's like a 10K or something like that, right? It's like, okay. So it's like, it's not just a sprint. It's you're in trails. Yeah. There's real single track. It's real trail running. Then great. But if it's going to be one of these, well, we have to have it close to like the arena. So we're going to like carve a dirt path through the city and call it trail running. Then like, don't bother. Like
sometimes they do that with like cross country skiing where it's just like, they like make like a thing where there's like some hills, but it's basically just like a built loop. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, but if you can do surfing, you can do trail running.
Absolutely. I guess there's probably more upsides than down, but I thought this was kind of interesting because to your point, that's why I was like, wait a minute, what about cross country? And then it said in the article, like it's been 1924 was the last time that they had a cross country.
Trail running brands must be fired up about this.
Well, Merrill's leading the charge.
Yeah, trail running brands, I said, though.
Yeah. That was really good. Sorry, Merrill.
Sorry, Merrill.
Maybe they'll give them the jungle box you can wear after the trail running race, you know?
Yeah, totally, totally.
So just yesterday, Footwear News reported that after 2024, REI would exit its house-branded footwear business. REI, who for a long time has made tents and sleeping bags, backpacks, and apparel, created REI-branded footwear 4 years ago, but are now stopping that part of their in-house line. Fan Zhao, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, REI's general manager of the run category, was quoted as saying, "We don't think that our true differentiated value add is in the manufacturing of footwear."
I agree.
Yeah, so do I. REI did say they'd be doubling down, though, on the running category. Demand for running and fitness categories have doubled since the pandemic, and as a response, REI has created in-store experiences focused on running, which they intend to expand. So, any initial thoughts on that?
Well, both the winding down, but also the mere existence of REI's footwear category is news to me.
Same.
So,
yeah,
I honestly, I go to REI all the time. I guess I don't really go to the shoe department for whatever reason, but I had absolutely no idea that you could buy an REI branded shoe until this very moment.
And the first time I saw them was in a picture in this Footwear News article. And I'm like, oh yeah, they do have them, I guess. I did not know either.
What were they?
I had some trail runners and boots.
Huh.
They said they did well. Of course they said they did well, right? But it's like, I don't know. I think branding probably matters on footwear more than like any other piece of product. I have no problem having an REI almost anything, but if you told me I had to wear REI shoes, I would be like, no.
That's interesting. I wonder why that is. I agree with you, though. I mean, like, I've had some REI stuff that's really good. I mean, like, my first tent was an REI tent. It's great. Someone's still using it, even if it's 20 years old, you know? I have some REI jackets that are good. I have no issue at all with their stuff, but, like, yeah, it would not occur to me to buy it. I wouldn't buy a pair of shoes.
I think it's, and this is going to sound really insulting. I don't really mean it this way, but I think REI stuff feels, it's like the generic version of the other brands. And none of it looks bad. It looks like anything else, right? I mean, it's kind of, honestly, like,
yeah.
I'd say this is a cautionary tale, even for like Run Rabbit, who I talked about, I think on a solo pod a couple weeks ago, about they're releasing a running shoe. It's just like, it doesn't. Just because you have good ideas, good design, good colors, it doesn't mean it. Footwear is a tricky beast. One of the first things you and I ever talked about, like low expanding of the trail running. It's like, it doesn't mean it's going to work just because you're already making one style of shoe. It's hard. Footwear is its own animal.
Yeah, that's some hubris there. But I also have always wondered, like, to what level is REI actually like designing and making their stuff versus just slapping their logo on. I actually have no idea.
Oh no, I mean, I sold them when I was at Polar Tech. I mean, they have a design and manufacturing, like a production team, just like pretty much anybody
just
else.
Like anybody else?
Yeah. I don't really understand the positioning as much anymore. This might be an interesting conversation to have with somebody who would know a little bit more about it because, you know, in like the 90s, early 2000s, you know, EMS and REI's in-house line did feel like the sort of more cost-effective version of like the bigger brands.
Totally. Yeah.
But it's all sort of the playing field's really leveled that way in terms of the materials and performance. It's all kind of the same now. Like, I think you could probably really make the case that, like, you know, a Gregory backpack versus an REI backpack, like, it's just going to, it will be personal preference. It's like the biggest difference, you know? Versus before, you'd be like, well, clearly the Gregory is going to be better, you know? So I don't know. And I think, but as footwear, yeah, that's it. That was a that was a tough place to go with it. So I think this is probably the right call. And honestly, kudos to REI for making the decision and not just continuing to write it out. It's like finally a story about somebody who is saying, hey, we are going to make less stuff. Like we're actually going to visit. Yeah. We really are making less. But what do you think of REI as a run destination, especially as a competitive ultramarathoner? Like, where do you go to buy your runs up? No, but like,
well,
seriously.
I go to, we don't have, Nike sends it to me because I'm a competitive ultramarathoner. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't think it would be my first choice.
Right.
But having said that, I don't know. I mean, they probably mean, do they mean trail running?
I think trail running, I'm assuming some road as well. They just really want to kind of, you know, I think they're kind of throwing a dart at what does that mean?
Does that mean that they're just not doing well? And they're like, well, we got to like bring in more stuff.
Definitely reading the terrain about what's growing and saying we should do more of that. I mean, I bought a pair of Lone Peaks from them before because I was buying my kids something and I needed a new pair of trail runners. I'm like, oh, there's my shoe that I wear. Sure. I'll just pick up a pair while I'm here, but it wouldn't be
But as a non-business owner, I still always react with I always have the same reaction to this sort of stuff, which is like, if you're REI and you're kind of doing fine and like everybody's getting paid and everyone's like relatively happy and you're like, oh, you know what? Road running is like this huge thing. Let's spend a bunch of money to like tap into that. It's like isn't that usually what messes brands up?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I also think I didn't
go to business school or anything, but it just seems like that's usually what happens when Kona or whatever like fails. It's because it's like, well, yeah, we did this one thing. We were really good at it and it seemed fine, but we had to grow. You know,
well, maybe people take the wrong lessons too. Like the brands coming out of the 90s and 2000s that got acquired, and then like the hardwares and TNFs and stuff like that. But that was also like everything was new, and so those were the companies that like there was room for them to grow if you wanted to buy them and invest in them. Now it's like, I think we're pretty well covered in some of these categories. Like the Kona one's probably a good example. Like, what did you think you were going to do? Like, there is already Trek and Giant, so are you going to try and compete with all those guys? But the REI one's interesting because I wouldn't, as a runner, I would much rather go to a run shop, a sports specialty run shop that is like staffed with like people who are running marathons and stuff like that, right? This is a run place. But they're also, REI isn't like Dick's, which is like a big sporting goods store, right?
Right. But it sounds like maybe they want to be a little bit.
Because you're going to compete against the Dick's, but you're also saying if you're doubling down on, you know, running, you're kind of competing against the little local run shop. So it's kind of a weird thing.
It feels like if we started a cooking show.
Yeah. Why does it feel like that?
Well, I mean, it's like, that's not really in our wheelhouse. You know, like we like to eat.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we like to eat while we're camping. Like we like to talk about food, you know, like it kind of in some ways makes sense, but like, I wouldn't start like a podcast that was like a cooking podcast, you know, that's kind of how it feels to me.
It's called The Joy of Cooking. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. You know, it's only been around for 150
years. It
doesn't
feel like it's in REI's like wheelhouse. Like you can I don't know.
I agree.
Just stick to camping. Just stick to the camping and the
gotta and grow.
The camping.
Gotta grow. We gotta
do
go.
You though?
Yeah, we gotta. It's the American way. All right, last thing. According to SGB, after 2 years of work, Puma has released a commercial version of the Re-Suede. So it's RE:Suede sneaker. And again, with the naming conventions, people, Justin and I are going to start a consultancy of how to name your products, showing that it could turn the shoe into compost under industrial conditions. Made with there's a little bit coming
up.
Oh,
I know what it means.
So made with materials that would decompose, consumers will have the ability to return used shoes to Puma to be put through a, quote, specially equipped industrial composting process and then get a 20% discount on their next purchase. So not quite, you know, plant your shoes in a potter or in your garden and then don't have to worry about it. But, you know, good step in the right direction.
I wanted to make fun of this until you explained it. This seems like a great idea. As long as it's, I mean, is it like outrageously expensive? I mean, if you get 20% off, but it's 30% more to buy it, like that's not going to work. But, I mean, I would love that. It seems very like a very obvious thing to do. It's a bummer that you have to send it back. Like I learned like we can't recycle or not recycle. We can't put compost bags in our compost here. Cause like our like county facility doesn't process that. And so all we can put is like just raw food. That's it. And like cardboard boxes and others.
Pizza boxes. Usually you can, right?
Why is that?
Cause you can't recycle them cause they get oily from the pizza, but you can compost.
But why can't I'm not supposed to put like regular cardboard in there.
I don't know.
Maybe it's like food grade cardboard.
I think it's all a scam.
I do too. Well, cause I watch them dump everything into the same bin in the truck anyway.
At the landfill.
But, Thank you. Yeah, it seems great. Like, I mean, like that's that, it's because they probably last the same amount of time. You know, it's interesting. I mean, they're made of like bio-based foams?
Yeah, I think the testing, they had people wearing them for like 18 months or something like that, yeah. Right? So I guess, you know, if this is the analogy is, you know, like when flat screen TVs were like $3,000 if you want one, and now they're like $200 at Target, you know, like you got to start somewhere. Right. And so it's like, hey, to start this, if we want compostable shoes, well, for right now, you got to send it back and we got to compost it for you.
I guess I do kind of also feel like, are these things like just kind of not necessarily greenwashing, but like just to make you feel a little bit better?
I don't trust anybody on this stuff.
I don't know enough to know whether or not like the shipping of the shoe back to them and however they like compost it, like, is that doing something bad too? Like, what's the, you know, it always boils down to what is your main concern here? You know, is it like proliferation of stuff? Is it carbon emissions? Is it, you
right.
know, I just don't know the answer. So it awesome. But like, it also feels like maybe just don't buy as many shoes, you know?
I think that's always a good idea. Although I do love shoes.
Or just make shoes that don't have to be composted because they last a lot longer. You know, I don't know.
Well, I think it's some combination of both. Eventually, then if we can get to the point where you can compost anything, I guess where you want to get to. I don't know. I guess if you think about if there's any sort of regulations coming, I would love to see if the first thing they pass, if Congress could pass, would be, hey, you have to just be really upfront about it. You can't market your shoes with any sort of like, you know, marketing hyperbole anymore. It's just like, no, you got to be honest about what this is and what it does. And, if it's like, yeah, this compost, but it never will.
Well, right. Like, I don't know what that means. Like, does it turn into actual fertilizer? And like, why does that have to be an industrial situation? Is
right.
Because it's being burned? Like, you know, like I don't understand
how
that works.
Should they be able to use the word compost under this? Because compost to me means I put it in my backyard and it turns into dirt.
Right? Yeah. I mean, just make shoes out of dirt.
Yeah.
How hard could that be? Just real soft dirt.
I don't know. It's all
I just
weird.
Know that if I had to like... You know, I sold a pair of shoes on Poshmark this week, and it still took me 2 extra days to go to the post office. Like I was like 2 days after I was supposed to do it, and I was getting actual money for it. Like if the shoes cost the same, I just have a feeling that like people will just kind of do what they do with the shoes normally.
That's true. The promise of compostable shoes is you didn't give me an errand to run at the end of life. I just get to throw it away and stop feeling guilty about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I look forward to the day where there's like just giant bins at like their shoe store and you can just drop your shoes in. And they deal with it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if REI does this, but Sports Basement, which is our local chain of like REIs basically, but there's only like 5 of them. Like they have these giant boxes where you just toss in your little green propane canisters when you're done using them.
That's
and they
cool.
deal with it. And like that should be like that for like virtually everything, you know, but
yeah, there's a long way to go in this stuff. And that's the thing. We really don't know about most of it. And everybody's just telling you how great their stuff is.
I mean, if it makes you feel good, I mean, great. It probably is good. It probably is good.
Well, I mean, we'll know because if in a few years, like this hasn't progressed any further, I guess it's not going to matter. But if in a few years, it's like, oh yeah, we used to have to do that industrially, but now we've cracked the case on you being able to do it at home.
You just put it into Mr. Fusion in your car and it powers your car.
See, now you're thinking. You said hydrogen.
This is what Elon
anyway.
Musk should be working on, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Get us Mr. Fusion already.
God damn it, Elon.
Just a can of beer and like a banana peel. And you're like, okay, we're good to travel through time.
Cybertruck's getting recalled, right? All the Cybertruck's getting recalled. Like, let's put
what a shame. God, what a shame.
But let's just, maybe it says it gets recalled and you get it back with a Mr. Fusion. Then it's like, all right. I buy a Cybertruck tomorrow.
If you have a Cybertruck and it gets recalled, you should also not be able to drive whatever your other 9 cars are. Like, it should be like punishment. Like, you should have anticipated this. You have to suffer a little bit.
They give you a Razor scooter as a loaner.
Yeah.
That's what you get until we give this back to you.
You have to drive a 1988 Honda Civic, and it's a 5-speed, so good luck with that.
That's a dope car.
Such a good car.
Right? Well, anyway, I mean, look, nobody else has released put out anything about a composting shoe, so good job, Puma.
That's awesome. Yeah. Also kind of forgot Puma existed until this conversation.
I was just about to ask you, what do you think of Puma?
Is Fila next? Are they still around?
Yeah, they're around. All these brands are still around. I think Puma actually has some juice, though. I think they fashion-wise, I think they're kind of doing something. Not that, you know, definitely not in our demo.
Be so into Pumas. I bet they're like make like killer basketball shoes, and you just wouldn't know unless you're
right.
like super into it. Oh, they probably make really good soccer shoes. Puma's European, aren't they?
Are they?
Boots.
Probably.
They probably make really good soccer boots.
My one of my 13-year-olds got a pair of Samba Classics lately, very recently.
Hey.
And I was kind of like, I think I might have to get myself a pair of Samba Classics.
Are they black?
Yeah, of course. She was talking about getting some different color. I'm like, yeah, just get the black ones, honey. Just get the black ones.
Never had them. Never had them.
Really?
Never will. Oh. Nope.
Why not?
We talked about this. I always felt like they looked like Irish gangster shoes or like you had to have like a super, super like modded like Subaru or something. Like they just felt like
we did talk about this.
Yeah. Like that's if I was right. gonna like go to like my shift at the bar where I like pour like Irish car bombs all day, I'd wear. I don't know why I associate them with like Irish stuff, but I do for some reason.
She looks good in them. They fit her.
They're
her
cool. Look, yeah. They're super cool. Yeah. I just never.
You're right.
I couldn't pull it off.
Yeah. Uh-uh. I'm just gonna go get another pair of Chucks or something. All right. Well, we can wrap it up there. Thanks for listening to The Rock Fight. It is a production of Rock Fight LLC. And for Justin Housman, I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening. And of course, as he always is, he's here to take us out. It's Krista Makes with the Rock Fight fight song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight.